This is Puget Sound Now, a look inside the issues happening in our communities around the Sound.
Good morning. Welcome to another edition of Puget Sound Now. I'm Bill Swartz with terrific topics and interviews lined up over the next 30 minutes. We learn about heart screenings and organ donations with a local nonprofit organization called Alexander's Hope.
Growing the race more and spreading more awareness of organ donation and the youth heart screenings. And I think the race does a great job at doing that.
Details about the fabulous Valentine's Day Dash fundraising event. Everett is home to the Navy, Boeing, cargo containers, and soon a multi-million dollar residential commercial waterfront development.
And truly feel that this is a destination waterfront that's been a hidden gem, and it's time to share it with the world.
The latest on the Port of Everett's waterfront place. First up, inflation is still a major factor in our lives. With so many of you working and taking classes at home, you're using up more energy, spending more money on heating bills and lighting. Let's connect with Seattle City Light Energy Advisor Tiffany Atencio. Hey, thanks for stopping by Puget Sound Now.
Hi, Happy New Year. Thanks for having me.
So more people, as I said, are spending time in their homes, their apartments, their condos. Have we seen some tangible results that, you know, the energy consumption is going up and AKA the energy bills are probably rising too?
We have. Since more people have been staying at home, it's estimated that electricity usage has increased about 4 to 5% for 2021 on average. And it does vary by season.
Yeah. You know, you have the pandemic and more people are confined inside, and then you throw in a heat dome we had last summer, and now we're into the winter cold months. What are some basic ways that folks can, maybe just turn down the thermostat a little bit, save on that electric bill?
Yeah, the most effective way would be lowering the heat. So heating uses the most energy in a home, and then that's usually followed by water heating. So yes, definitely lowering the heat is going to make a big difference.
You know, you can turn it down to 62 or 63 at night and then have it at 68, 69 during the day. But does that save us a lot of money, or should there be like a smaller temperature range so we're not spending a lot of money heating up the house again?
Yeah, usually if you turn it down to, 65 to 68 during the day, and then if you can turn it down lower at night, that's going to save you quite a bit. I mean, every degree that you turn the temperature down, that's going to give you a savings on your electricity bill.
Are there some DIYs, Tiffany, like a little device we could take around to see if we have a draft in the window or the door frames or that sort of thing, knowing that our energy bills are going out there and outside?
Well, you can actually feel for airflow. Besides heating consumption, heat loss is a huge factor in your electricity bill. So if you, for example, place your hand by the window and feel that it's cooler there, then a simple solution would be window kits, where there's like a plastic window kit that you can get at home improvement stores, mm-hmm. As a short-term solution, as opposed to expensive replacing your windows. Weather stripping, caulking as well. Also under your doors, you can install under the door kits to stop drafts. And then Seattle City Light has a do-it-yourself energy audit on our website, and it walks you through simple ways of finding airflow. And it's a good step to take, even if you do hire a professional to do a home energy audit.
We're kind of old school. We took a candle, and if the flame flickers, you can tell sometimes if you have a draft there too. Let's talk about light bulbs. And a lot of folks, because of the environment, have gone to LED, but what kind of savings are we talking there if you switch out from the old incandescent?
You're going to notice a significant savings by switching to LED lighting.
Just short or long-term?
Mostly long-term. You're probably not going to notice it on your next bill, but over time, if you look at your annual bills, you're going to notice a savings.
I have some neighbors that just like to light up the whole community. They leave them on all day. Does that waste energy?
I mean, if you're not using it, yes, it can be considered wasting. But if they have LED lights, it's not going to make a significant difference on, say, one bill. However, over the course of the year, that's going to add up.
A lot more folks are washing clothes and dishes now all the time. A basic dishwasher, is there a way to save money there and electricity?
Yes, if you can avoid using the heat dry cycle, that's going to save you electricity. Heating uses the most electricity, so that's going to make the biggest difference for the dishwasher. Let it air dry if you can. And then with a washer and dryer, with the washing machine, if you can use cold water, because again, the hot water is going to use more electricity.
Does City Light have an energy assistance program? Folks like you that are on call or would come out to a home or something to help you upgrade, or is that pretty much on the resident?
We don't have any programs like that now where City Light will go out to your home. So it would just be any rebates that we have, which do change over time. Right now we have a heat pump water heater rebate and then a heat pump heater rebate, which also provides heating and cooling available through participating contractors. That would be an instant discount.
What advantages are there with that, especially with our large swings in temperature now going to a heat pump?
Well, a heat pump is going to offer significant savings, sometimes up to being 300 to 400% efficient, whereas compared to a standard baseboard heater, it's only going to be up to 100% efficient. So there's going to be a significant savings in that. Plus, with the heat pump system, it provides heating and cooling. And as we know, summers in Seattle have been getting hotter. So it gives you that benefit of having both.
I'm seeing a lot of folks going to plug-in electric vehicles too. Are we noticing, or let me ask you this, is there a way for that to be energy efficient and not take up a lot of juice as you recharge your car?
I don't know of any ways where that would, where you could reduce that savings. If you are, I know in a couple of years, we're going to be offering time of day rates, but I don't know when that will be coming out. But when that is available, people will be able to program when they can charge their vehicles, for example, during off-peak times when the rates are lower.
Energy advisor Tiffany Atencio is with Seattle City Light. Give me a few more things maybe we didn't touch on as a way for folks to save money, save electricity in the coming months.
Reinforcing that heating and heat loss are going to be the most important factors. Here's one. If you like fresh air, but it's cold out, don't leave your window open because your heat's just going to escape. That's a big one.
Wonderful advice. Great information. I'm glad we could share it with our listeners on Puget Sound Now. All the best to you.
Thank you.
On a show called Puget Sound Now, it's only fitting we talk about the region's great treasure, water. An exciting public-private project has been announced to change the image of Everett's waterfront. A blue-collar city has a goal of becoming a place for living, working, eating, shopping, and playing. The transformation is called Waterfront Place. Here with details, the Port of Everett CEO, Executive Director Lisa Lefebvre, and the Schuster Group President Holly Gardner. Lisa, let's start us out with an idea of what's on the 65-acre property right along Marine View Drive in Everett.
The project sits in what we like to call the epicenter of Everett's mill town. Everett has a long, strong history of being a mill town as well as a fishing community and boat building community. And so the port has been working for the better part of 20 years to clean up a significant amount of historic contamination on the site from those industries. And actually just last year fully flipped the switch from a light industrial waterfront to a full mixed use destination waterfront surrounded by the largest public marina on the West Coast with over 2,300 slips.
Wow, that's massive. And folks who have boats on Puget Sound or Lake Washington, they know how hard it is to get a waterfront slip or moorage. So that's been a great amenity over the years. You mentioned the cleanup. Where do we stand on that?
Yeah, so this project was in 2007, Governor Gregoire at the time created the Puget Sound Initiative. And this was the pilot project for that program. And so we removed more than 120,000 cubic yards of contaminated debris as part of that program. It is a state cleanup. in our partnership with the Department of Ecology, the entire site has officially gotten a clean bill of health.
I guess you start with the basic premise. You have waterfront land, which is hard to come by nowadays, a majestic view, and that's pretty good canvas for something special, isn't it?
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, a lot of people think of Everett and they think of the Navy and the seaport and Boeing, which are all wonderful amenities, but the waterfront and the views are truly amazing and breathtaking. We've got the Olympics to the west, we've got the Cascades to the east, and we've got Mount Baker to the north. And so you really have panoramic mountain views combined with all of the beautiful water and shipping and boating activities that you get a view of down here as well.
Well, you have a long-term lease now announced this month with the Schuster Group, no strangers to property development in our communities. Holly Gardner, I drive by some of your company's projects almost every day in downtown Seattle, but give us a little bit of history of your company.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've been local to the Pacific Northwest for almost 35 years now, and are really focused on doing projects that enrich the community that we live and work in. So that's always been a basis behind everything we do. And we develop everything from, high-rise multifamily to retail to mixed use to office. We've done golf courses and restaurants and storage as well. So we've really done a mixed bag over the years. And we just love the waterfront location here in Everett. We've watched it for years. We've been engaged with them on and off since 2017, trying to find a way to make this project work for us, and truly feel that this is a destination waterfront that's been a hidden gem. And it's time to share it with the world.
Give me an idea about the timing. You said discussions for so many years and looking at this property longingly. Why is now the right time to go forward?
I think there's a big demand for, outdoor destinations like this. COVID has really made that a highlight over the last 2 years. And there's a lot of demand for restaurants moving out of maybe downtown cores that have struggled, such as downtown Seattle. And they're looking for these beautiful destination locations where their restaurants and their facilities can thrive. So we've got, demand, we've got interest, and we've got sustainable partners to move forward with this on now. And I think the port has done a wonderful job of investing over the last several years and showing people what their vision looks like. So people finally get it, right? It's not just on paper. It's 3D. We have multifamily buildings. We have a hotel. We have a splash fountain. They can visualize how great this is going to be. And that's just created massive interest. So that's why now it's ready.
What makes the waterfront place in Everett so exciting and with enormous potential? Your company does, when you enter a project, you have vision and a brand. What would you put your stamp on here with the waterfront place?
This is all about honoring the local history of the waterfront in Everett and bringing forth a new wave of engagement at that waterfront. You've got a built-in base with the North Residential Neighborhood and the Naval Base, which we've discussed. But a lot of people outside of Everett or Snohomish County have never been down there. But if you have, you know that it takes forever to get into a restaurant on the waterfront. They're all very busy. And so we just see this as an opportunity to kind of regentrify that waterfront and create a really meaningful community addition for families and locals and for people who want to travel and, spend an afternoon or a day up here. It appeals to all demographics, we feel like, and our goal is to really make it an enjoyable experience with lots of little delights and surprises throughout the day as you explore the waterfront.
Lisa, I'm a little bit surprised until Waterfront Place Apartments, Everett did not have housing on the waterfront. What have been the obstacles? What have been the challenges?
Yeah, so I think the big thing has just been that Everett is a town of industry. You mentioned you're from the Pierce County area, similar to the Tacoma area, Everett was an industrial hub. One of the things that the port is working on doing and has been very focused on is creating this balanced waterfront where our working waterfront, our international seaport, Navy base can grow and thrive. We're actually building a new 40-acre cargo terminal to the south of this to really build that job base and that industry and support the maritime aspects, but then have a demarcation line at the Navy base where to the north of it is our destination waterfront that allows the quality of life pieces to move forward in our community. So the waterfront housing, the the waterfront trails and businesses that Holly mentioned, as well as a job center. We have plans to build a job center down here as the second phase of this project. And so it's really getting the waterfront ready to accept it in a way that doesn't hurt our industries that our community values so deeply.
It sounds to me like you want industry and residents to coexist. And I can just envision people walking over and looking at the port container activity with this promenade you're talking about. It's really fascinating to me, the juxtaposition that's possible here.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things I always say about Everett is we have everything, right? I mean, we are the major job center for Snohomish County with the seaport, the Navy base, aerospace, and now we're going to be the epicenter for fun. And it's already starting with the city's investment in the Grand Avenue Bridge connecting the downtown core to the waterfront. That was really a game changer in terms of activating the pedestrian and foot traffic on the waterfront.
Holly, you're in design phase. There's a coffee business, a brewery expansion. You talked about wineries and distilleries. I think you start those basic premises, you have something. You know, folks want to come and sample the Northwest finest.
Absolutely. I mean, there's been wonderful restaurants at the port. We've got new ones that are being added, Fisherman Jack's and South Fork Bakery. And we want to bring in, you know, even more to supplement that. But our goal here is that people can meander that esplanade and enjoy several local tasting rooms, whether it be wineries or distilleries or breweries. They may share tasting room space, so you can go in and, you know, taste from several local locations all in one building. But it creates an experience that, you know, you can walk along and enjoy and stretch your legs and, you know, go out with friends or go out with your family because you can watch your kids play out front while you're enjoying a glass of wine. Every mom's dream. So we just think that there's a really wonderful opportunity here to create something cool. And where else can you get a waterfront wine tasting experience in Washington? We think this is really, really special, and there's been a lot of interest in it. And I think it's going to be a very cool development when it's done.
Hey, we hear so much about building green. Can you tell us what Schuster Group and the Port of Everett are doing with the design and construction, both to conserve energy and then reduce our carbon footprint?
Absolutely. It's a pillar of everything the Schuster Group does. We try and build the most sustainable buildings we can, whether we seek certification or not. And we look at sustainability as a holistic approach, right? It's not about checking a box and getting a certificate. It's about, does the products that we're putting in this building last? Are they produced locally? Are they environmentally friendly? Am I going to have to replace them in 5 years, or do they have a longer duration than that? So we really try to look at the whole life cycle of what we're putting into a building and create something that's lasting and sustainable and friendly to our environment. And best of yet, create an environment where people want to get together in a healthy way, right? That's another piece of sustainability that we're always trying to look for, is how do we make these spaces not only healthy for their inhabitants, but enjoyable for them?
Possible question for both of you. What type of positive impact are we talking with regard to construction jobs, number one, and then long-term employment at this site, and then tax dollars coming back to the economy?
The Waterfront Place project, when it's built out, is going to create over 2,000 jobs. And that study was a little outdated. I actually think it's probably going to be higher now and generate, you know, close to $8.6 million in state and local taxes. That doesn't even include the tourism draws. And the rule of thumb is for every $1 million of construction you spend, it generates about 25 construction jobs.
Lisa, will the marina expand under this project?
Our next big project is a relocation and renovation of our new fuel dock that'll support not only our boating population, but also tourism boats, as well as the U.S. Navy.
Holly, the port would like to see a new building there every year for the next 5 years. What are the potential phases for development we're going to see in 2022?
We do plan to kick off construction on the first one this year. We may begin a second one this year as well. I think we'll see probably about half the buildings delivered in the first 3 years, and then see where demand's at for the remaining buildings. But obviously getting all of these folks in as quickly as possible so that they can support one each other and create that destination experience is our goal. We're working very closely with local contractors and subcontractors and suppliers. To your question on job creation earlier to Lisa, you know, one of our big focuses is trying to use small to mid-size local contractors and subs for this project and really support that local economy. And because of the size of the buildings and we're taking them on, you know, one or two at a time, we can do that. We don't need, you know, large construction or architecture firms, which are very busy in downtown locations already. So that's something we're really looking forward to. And these individuals are really passionate about the community in which they work because it's theirs. So we found that everybody's working towards a common goal and working to make these buildings successful one way or the other. They're not easy, but we're determined to do it.
As I said, it's exciting. I'm sorry, go ahead, Lisa.
Oh, I just wanted to add to that. You know, Holly mentioned about sustainable partners. I think one of the things that sets us apart from just a standard private development is that the port, this is a strategic priority for the port. You know, to get this project moving forward, the port's actually building the first restaurant pads and retail pads in Fisherman's Harbor. And we will continue to make sure that that's focus and making sure that the Schuster Group and our developers are successful and able to move forward as we mitigate some of these unknowns in the supply chain as well as construction industry and inflation and so forth. So we're committed to moving forward and not losing time regardless.
Exciting times, as I said, in Everett, the changing face of a really fine city. We appreciate Lisa Lefebvre with the Port of Everett and Holly Gardner, the Schuster Group, for giving us the lowdown on Waterfront Place. All the best to you. I'm excited to see it. Thank you for being part of Puget Sound Now.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm pleased and proud to say our three Lotus Seattle radio stations are once again supporting a worthy cause February 12th in downtown Kirkland. It's the third annual Valentine's Day Dash, supporting Alexander's Hope and the Nick of Time Foundations. And stopping by Puget Sound Now this morning, the founder and president of Alexander's Hope, Bella Chafee. First and foremost, tell us what Alexander's Hope is all about.
So we started in 2018, and we started after my brother Alexander suffered from an undiagnosed and then misdiagnosed heart condition, which resulted in him needing to get a heart transplant at the age of 19.
My goodness, there were no signs whatsoever, or were there kind of symptoms that led to something else?
He had some symptoms which were misdiagnosed as panic attacks when in reality they were heart attacks, which is what led to his heart being scarred enough for him to need a heart transplant as opposed to a valve replacement.
Why did you feel the need to start this organization? I mean, you're honoring his memory, but there's so many people out there in that predicament. Is that kind of why you began this organization?
Yeah, so we began Alexander's Hope. It was firstly to educate individuals on the importance of organ donation and to talk about any misconceptions that are related to organ donation and get people to sign up to become donors. And then that also turned into us wanting to help youths that are in similar situations to Alexander that didn't know they had anything wrong with them and to find out if there are any undiagnosed heart conditions sooner than later so they don't need to have a heart transplant. Alexander was really, really lucky to have survived his ordeal, but many that are in the same circumstances as he was aren't that lucky.
How do we get more young people diagnosed throughout the junior high school years? A lot of them are required to take physicals to participate in PE and sports and that sort of thing. Should diagnosis of a heart condition be part of that exam?
So ideally, yes, a heart screening would be part of your yearly physicals when you are younger, as your heart is constantly, you know, growing and changing. And that is the goal. But as of right now, since that is not mandatory, we partner with the Nick of Time Foundation, who has been around much longer than us. And we do heart screenings normally once a month at local high schools to test for these undiagnosed heart conditions and then also educate youths on how to do CPR and operate an AED in case there is a circumstance where somebody is suffering from sudden cardiac arrest around them.
Of course, one of the benefactors, too, of this Valentine Fun Run is Nick of Time, which you said you're partners with. For people not familiar with that organization, give us a little synopsis of what they do that's really important about getting defib machines into all of the high schools.
Yes, so Nick of Time Foundation, they have been around for I think they've been screening young hearts for right around 10 to 12 years, and they have helped put in AED machines in local high schools and gyms. But then now what they do, which is so important, is actually screening these young hearts. So they partner with some doctors at UW Medical Center mm-hmm. who come to these heart screenings once a month and perform EKGs and then in some cases echocardiograms on all the youths who sign up. And then we teach them CPR and how to operate an AED so that the AEDs that have been placed in the schools and in the gyms are actually hopefully used if a situation occurs where they should be.
Dr. Kim Harmon with UW Sports Medicine, one of the primary proponents of that. I'm really glad to see that taking off in all of the high schools around here. So that's nick of time. Give us an idea about, there's hundreds of thousands of people out there that need transplants, aren't there? But how can people become organ donors, too, in this whole scenario?
When you go in to get a new driver's license, you can sign up that way. But a lot of times you're not wanting to go through that ordeal once you decide to become a donor if you're not already. And you can actually sign up online. So if you Google it, it'll pop up on Donate Life's website and you can become an organ donor that way as well. And then ideally, when you get your new driver's license, you'd put it on there as well, but you'll be in the database if you sign up online.
You think because of COVID, a little more people are reticent to go in and get checked and see if they're a match or that sort of thing? Has that been a problem?
I haven't heard as much for heart conditions or okay. organ transplants, but definitely for blood donors have been really needed.
We had
nowadays.
A blood shortage too right now. So how can, again, people, it's that easy to see if you're a potential donor, or you just sign up when you go to get your driver license renewed?
Yeah, so you would just sign up and then that way you would be in the database for, and this is for organ donation if you pass away, but then there's also ways to sign up to be on other registries like bone marrow. Be the Match does fantastic work, and so that way you're actually signing up if somebody has some sort of disease where they need a live donor. If you are a match, you would be reached out to from Be the Match as well.
Have you seen tangible results with this campaign in your 3 years? Is there a young person, 3, 4, that we've saved some lives just with early detection?
Yes, there have been. So with Nick of Time Foundation, I have their full stats, and they've screened just about 23,000 youths. And then there's been about 400 that they found that had an undiagnosed heart condition. And some of those are just, on watch, or if something were to happen later in their life, they'd be able to get the help they need as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. And then there's been a handful of those that actually needed an open heart surgery right away. And that could be, a valve replacement, an organ transplant, but something major. And those people specifically, their lives, I think, were 100% saved by the work of Nick of Time Foundation.
We think of Valentine's and hearts, and that's such a great, perfect combination, a match for this fun run that's coming in from what your organization does.
A fun way to have an event in relation to organ donation. Plus, there's not quite as many events going on in the month of February, mostly due to the poor weather, but it's still a fun time to get out there and run.
Hey, all the cold and the rain stuff's behind us now. We're looking to February 12th, and tell people how they can sign up for the Valentine's Day run to benefit Alexander's Hope and Nick of Time.
So if you go to alexandershope.org, there'll be a tab up top that's titled Valentine's Day Dash. From there, you can get all the information you need in regards to the race. You'll have contact information if you have questions, and then you'll also be able to sign up for either the in-person event or the virtual race.
Where do you hope to go from here? What's the next step?
Ideally, for the race-wise, we would love to grow the race more. I know our first year was actually very, very beginning of 2020, and so races and any events have been tough since then, but we're hoping to be able to start growing the race more and spreading more awareness of organ donation and the youth heart screenings, and I think the race does a great job at doing that. And then in terms of Alexander's Hope as an organization, we hope that we will be able to grow the heart screening program to screen more youths every year. And then also with that would be the fundraising needed to be able to screen more youths at no cost.
Here's hoping this is a little bit of a start, and we wish you great success in the fun run and going forward. Again, that's Valentine's Day, February 12th. Alexander's Hope is the way to make it happen. Give us the website one more time.
alexandershope.org.
Simple as that. Bella Chafee is the founder. Thank you so much for stopping by Puget Sound Now and sharing that important story.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks to all my Puget Sound Now guests for sharing their stories and information, and to you for listening. I'm Bill Swartz. Let's visit again next Sunday morning.
Thank you for listening to Puget Sound Now. Tune in every Sunday morning to learn about the issues happening in our communities around the Sound. Puget Sound Now is a public service of Lotus Seattle Corp.